Hello, and welcome to the 29th episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG and Mike, and today I am joined once again by Kevin, Professor Boss, K-Dog Thompson. Hello.
Hello, it's good to be more regular.
Yes.
It's good to be back on a consistent basis, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I don't think I want to even joke about being irregular, because...
I know, I knew that sounded pretty bad.
Yeah, we're not talking bowel movements on this show.
Although for this one, no, I'm just kidding.
By the time this airs, I believe two of our MWire holiday shows will be up, A Christmas Story and Jack Frost. We're actually recording this a little bit ahead of time, so we will be right back with Snow White and the Seven Midgets.
The picture that every newspaper and magazine critic is raving about. Hear what the usually hard-boiled review of Time magazine says. Snow White is as exciting as a Western, as funny as a haywire comedy. It combines the classic idiom of folklore drama with rollicking comic strip humor. It is an authentic masterpiece. More than 250,000 paintings like these were created by Walt Disney and his staff of artists to make the most daring adventure in the history of motion pictures. With new and amazing characters, Snow White, warm, human, the lovable seven dwarfs. But let Walt Disney tell you about them himself.
Dwarfs' names fit their personalities. This pompous-looking individual is Doc, the self-appointed leader of the group. And this little fellow is Bashful. He's secretly in love with Snow White. And this funny face is Sneezy. He has hay fever. And old Droopy Eyes is called Sleepy. And Happy here with a beaming smile. And old Sourpuss here is Grumpy, the woman-hater. And last but not least is Dopey. He's nice, but sort of silly.
We are back, and it is time for the history lesson. Take it away.
All right, for the history lesson today, we go way back to... 1937. Yes, I said that. I didn't stutter. 1937 for Snow White and the Seven Midgets. Based on the Brothers Grimm fairy tale Snow White, obviously, it was the first full-length cell animated feature in motion picture history with a disclaimer in the United States. As well as the first animated feature film produced in America, the first produced in full color, the first to be produced by Walt Disney, and the first in the Walt Disney animated classics canon. In other words, for today, we are going back to the beginning. Walt Disney's Snow White premiered at the Carthay Circle Theater on December 21st, 1937, and the film was released to theaters by RKO Radio Pictures on February 4th, 1938. The story was adapted by storyboard artists Dorothy Ann Blank, Richard Creedon, Meryl Demarest, Otto Englander, Earl Hurd, Dick Hickard, Ted Peters, and Webb Smith from the German fairy tale Snow White by the Brothers Grimm. David Hand was the supervising director, and some other people which nobody knows. Snow White was one of only two animated films to rank in the American Film Institute at AFI's list of the 100 greatest American films of all time. This was done in 1997. It was a great show, even if I don't agree with other choices. The other being Disney's Fantasia, which I'm not even going to get started on. Snow White ranked number 49. Fantasia 49. It achieved a higher ranking, number 34, in the list 2007 update. So it went from number 49 to number 34 when they updated it in 2007. This time being the only traditionally animated film on the list, the following year AFI would name the film, and I do remember watching this show, as the greatest animated film of all time. God, it's always good to be first, because you get extra acclaim just for being first, even if you're not as good as third or second. In 1989, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was added to the United States National Film Registry as being deemed culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. So that's it for the lesson. Let's move on to the rest of the show.
Yeah. I actually don't know what to say for the general memories because
this is just a classic, though. This is, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but this is just classic where just being the first at something makes you somehow better than you are. And I'm not trying to trash Snow White, and I'm gonna try to do my best job of not trashing Snow White because I realize how significant it is, and I realize the historical, and I'm a history teacher, so I realize all that nonsense. But being a history teacher, there's so many times where just being first makes you like so much greater than you actually are. And I don't know what to say about it. It's a great movie. It's a good movie. It should not be getting more acclaim just because it was first over some of the other Disney movies. That's my point.
Yeah, I mean, see, the thing is, I think the way that they were going for is probably with that last note that you read in the history lesson is that obviously it is the first. And hell, all of the trailers that I've watched for this film, especially the one that was done in 2001, I don't know. There was one that I watched earlier before we started recording this that, you know, before, and then it would show an image of Lion King, or before, and then it would show an image of Aladdin. You know, it's, you know, in the beginning, this came.
In the beginning, there was Snow White.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if this didn't happen, none of these other films would have come to be.
And I don't like that argument.
I don't really care either way, honestly. When I watched this a little while ago before we started this recording, first of all, I didn't even remember the way. I mean, I remember certain aspects of the film, but I didn't remember the way that it ended. And honestly, I really don't like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I don't.
But I mean, let me go back to that point for a real quick second, though. That argument can be made numerous times, and sometimes it's legit, and sometimes it's not. When you say that, like, let's say Transformers, Thundercats, and Silverhawk would not have happened if He-Man didn't come first. You can say that legitimately because at the time, He-Man literally broke boundaries where things were not being allowed to be done that now they could do. Snow White's a completely different argument. If Snow White didn't happen, something else would have. Like, some other movie would have been made, and that movie would be getting all the acclaim. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about the actual quality of Snow White. It's not about the storytelling. It's not about anything. It's just, it was first. But you can't say that Lion King and Aladdin wouldn't have happened. Some other movie would have been made by Disney that would have, or some other company that would have been just as successful, and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, you know,
it's not like they were breaking, it's not like they were being prevented by doing something and they, like, broke some type of barrier.
Yeah.
They just happened to be the first person that did it. It's like the telephone, the first person that made the telephone. If they hadn't done it, somebody else would have.
Alexander Graham Bell, where's my extra credit, you bastard?
And actually, he didn't invent the telephone. That's just it. Like, he gets all the credit for it. Somebody else invented it. So it's like, whatever. But I don't know. I'm not trying to hard. I mean, I enjoy Snow White. I enjoy lots of parts about it. I hate things that are overrated.
I enjoy some parts about it, but the overall film in general, I think the only thing I can commend about it is the animation.
Yeah.
And I will get to that once we get down to the actual plot, the actual show of this episode, because, yeah, there's a lot of things going on in this film.
Yeah. Since this is more, you know, general memories and stuff, I will give it credit that compared to some movies, there are more parts that I remember. Mm-hmm. But that could be for a number of factors. You know, maybe it's because there were seven dwarfs, and as a kid, that's kind of a bizarre thing to be watching, so you remember more parts of it. Maybe I just was shown the movie more when I was a kid. You know, I remember more parts of... I don't know. I think I remember just as many parts from Snow White as I do Cinderella, but, you know, it has its memorable moments and whatnot. It's a great movie. It's just not as great as everyone thinks it is.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm off my soapbox. I stepped down.
Yes, we're going to move into the characters and voice actors here. And I do have to skip all the way down this list really quick because we got to talk about Dopey. Dopey, Eddie Collins was the one that played sort of voiced Dopey. Dopey is the only dwarf that does not have a beard. He is clumsy and mute, with Happy explaining that he has simply never tried to speak. And one of the reasons why I started with Dopey was because originally Mel Blanc, Man of a Thousand Voices, was briefly considered for this role. I don't think you could have the same effect if Mel... No disrespect to him at all, but if Mel had done Dopey, it wouldn't be the same film at all.
No.
It wouldn't be the same effect. I mean, you know, throughout the entire film, or throughout the one scene where they're leaving for work and she's kissing them all on the forehead, he keeps coming around and just putting his lips up to her. And of course, she just, you know, grabs him by the ears, turns his head down, and kisses him on the forehead.
Yeah.
If there was an actual voice for Dopey, I don't think it would work for the film. I just don't.
Speaking of Dopey, I think with this movie, this movie I have some clear-cut favorites and not favorites as far as characters go.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite, hands down, would be Dopey and I believe it was probably Dopey and Doc. And with an honorable mention to the Magical Mirror. And my least favorite character, hands down, is Snow White. Hands down, Snow White. I could not stand her. She wasn't pretty. She wasn't funny to me. She wasn't charming. She was lame and pale.
Her cheeks look like they were on fire.
She's so white with these red cheeks. And the hair wasn't doing it for me. I know I was a kid, but even as a kid, I had no interest in Snow White.
She had bigger shoulder pads than she did tits.
She was no Princess Aurora.
Or Ariel.
Or she was no Ariel, or she was no Belle. I can go on and on and on. Snow White may be the least attractive Disney heroine ever. I will say it. Find me a less attractive heroine in a Disney film. Find me one. That's a challenge. Find me one and then follow me on Twitter, BossKDog, and tell me who it is. That's the challenge for the listeners.
I was trying to think. It's not really Disney. The only one I could probably...
Got to be Disney. A less attractive Disney heroine. Okay. And if you can find me one and Twitter it and I agree with you... Maybe that'll do something for you. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say the only one I can actually think of course it isn't Disney, but Fiona's ogre form.
That's cheating, by the way. Alternate forms of person do not count. In their form. When you sit down to draw a heroine of a movie and this is what you come up with, you should be fired. That's my point.
The animator was on heroine while he was drawing the heroine.
I know she was one of the most iconic figures ever in Disney. I know everyone's, Snow White, and you know that everyone knows who Snow White looks like, and they compare people to Snow White. Whatever. Don't ever try to be Snow White.
First of all, her hair is too short.
She's so pale.
If a woman's hair only comes down to the top or the nape of her neck, yeah, that's way too short.
I don't know. I'm just gonna get on. I got off of my one soapbox and I got on another one. I'm sorry, but I really like the mirror and I really like Dopey and Doc.
I like Grumpy too. Grumpy was kind of cool.
Yeah, even though they're midgets, the midgets are the best part of this movie. I don't think most people can. I don't think as creepy as they are, and as you know, as we're gonna get into, as weird as it is, they're the best part of the movie. Without the dwarves, this movie blows. I had to like my word choice there.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about sneezing fits. I gotta say, I don't have it. This is actually my mom is a huge Snow White fan. Don't ask me why.
It's okay. I have no problem with other people liking it.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying, don't ask me why. So last year, I think it was for Christmas. And of course, now I get severely kicked in the nuts this year when they actually bring it out of the fucking Disney vault. I spent, and I'm not going to say the amount of money, my mom's listening to this show, for the 2-disc Platinum Edition, which came out God knows how many numbers of years ago. I spent over a certain amount of money for this 2-disc edition DVD, which it has a lot of bonus features. It is very cool. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to see a lot of this stuff. And I think that on this DVD, the menus, I think the voice of the Magic Mirror is different from the actual film. I think the voice of the Magic Mirror on this Platinum Edition DVD is Tony Jay, who did Shere Khan in Tailspin. Who was Lex Luthor's minion, Nigel, in Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman.
Alright, stop showing off.
Huh? What?
Stop showing off on your knowledge of... No, I'm just kidding. I want to know... I'm just going to go off track a little bit. I want to know, who is the person... Well, I know it's probably not just one person. It's probably like a committee or something. But who is the person sitting behind the desk at Disney that gets the pleasure of playing with people's minds and wallets and hearts and gets to decide what goes in, what goes out, what comes back out, what goes in forever of the Disney vault? The Disney vault, as it is both the worst and the best idea ever. And I just picture this person behind the desk with this maniacal laugh as he just, like, messes with people.
Yeah, I agree, and we will probably... We will probably have, like, as a ending to the spotlight, whenever the very last animation, Disney animation spotlight film, is done, whichever film that will be within Tooncast's, lifespan, we will probably have a special segment just for the Disney Vault, because it is friggin' ridiculous.
I can't keep track. I don't know what I can buy and what I can't.
Well, they brought out Robin Hood and Peter Pan, and now they've put them back.
I know, you, and then they tell you it's never going to be back, and you lost your chance, and then 5 years later it's out again, and and I realize what they're doing, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Who did you not like?
Who do I not like? Well,
Snow White.
Her voice is like nails on a chalkboard.
What did you say?
Snow White. Her voice is like nails on a chalkboard.
Man, we are agreeing with each other too much.
Well, all right. When she started doing her little singing notes, her the first thing I thought of was fucking Amy Fuller as Snow White in Shrek the Third when she goes into the freaking Zeppelin thing with the screaming and it's just the first thing I thought of. I was actually going to get a comparison because I have Shrek the Third in the other room. I was actually going to take the Snow White track from this DVD, her little singing thing, take the Amy Fuller track of her little screaming thing, and put them in as audio. I don't know if I'm going to do that yet or not. I might. I don't know. You just never know. Yeah, Snow White has to be the worst character in this movie.
Thank you.
Now, that's not to say the Queen isn't bad. The Queen is just pure evil. And it's just petty jealousy. That's what it boils down to.
There's nothing, no doubt about that.
I mean, that's what it boils down to. I gotta say, what was that one Bugs Bunny cartoon where he dresses up as a witch and goes to Witch Hazel's?
Oh, gosh. I remember that one.
On Halloween. And she's like, Magic Mirror, who is the ugliest one of all? And then at the end of that cartoon, she turns herself into this, knockout babe. And Magic, she goes... In this, like, really sexy voice, she goes, Magic Mirror, who is the ugliest one of all? And the Magic Mirror appears, and he's like, row, row. And he gets on his magic carpet, and she chases her out of the house. For some odd reason, I was waiting for the magic mirror in this movie to do that.
that might have made it. no comment. Never mind.
I like in the scene when they're like dancing and playing music in the dwarf's house. I like when Sneezy and Dopey get together and they become this tall person with Dopey on top and Sneezy on the bottom. I thought that was kind of funny.
I think if the dwarves would have been Smurfs.
No.
Just kidding.
No. Don't make me find a permanent
post. Think if Smurfs had a character like Snow White in it.
Smurfette.
No, but Smurfette was way better than Snow White. I'm sorry, we're going way off trail.
No, Smurfette was Snow White in the beginning.
Her version.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, her hair was originally black.
So instead, Snow White would have been better if we could take Snow White out and put Smurfette in.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't have that much else to say. And the prince in this, the prince in this is just a... He's in two scenes, that's it.
Yeah, he's not a very, memorable prince.
He's not a heroic character. He's not a stalker-type character like you have in Cinderella.
Mm.
He's just a two-shot character. He's in two scenes, and that's it.
Yeah.
I really don't have anything else to say about the voices here. So, yeah, going into the behind-the-scenes segment, you can read some of this if you have it.
Yep. Development on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs began in early 1934, and in June, Walt Disney announced the production of his first feature to the New York Times. Big news. Before Snow White, the Disney studio had been primarily involved in the production of obviously animated short subjects, like everybody knows, in the Mickey Mouse and Silly Symphony series. Yay! Anyway, Disney hoped to expand his studio's prestige and revenues by moving into features. Good choice. And estimated that Snow White could be produced for a budget of $250,000, 10 times the budget of an average Silly Symphony. Walt Disney had to fight to get the film produced, obviously, since it was the first, so, I mean, this is where it does get some good credit. Both his brother and business partner Roy Disney and his wife Lillian attempted to talk him out of it. That's why nobody knows who Roy Disney is, but everybody knows who Walt Disney is. And the Hollywood movie industry referred to the film as Disney's Folly while it was in production. He even had to mortgage his house to help finance the film's production, which eventually ran up a total cost of not $250,000, but $1,488,422.74. Don't forget the 74 cents. A massive sum for a feature film in 1937. So, you know, that's where you do get some credit, but the credit should not go to the movie. The credit should go to Walt Disney.
Yes.
The movie's not necessarily what made it work. Walt Disney is who made it work.
Yep.
And Roy Disney, you're an idiot.
It's actually funny. Looking at this two-disc edition platinum thing, it says that the DVD is hosted by Roy Disney and the Magic Mirror.
Oh, my.
Yes, let's see.
I mean, obviously there was a lot, since it was the first one, and they're putting a lot on this, there's going to be a lot of early ideas, rough drafts, going back over, changing things, redoing things, and all that type of stuff. I think one of the interesting things that we should mention is that the dwarves' names were chosen from a pool of about 50 potential names. Let's look at some of the ones that we didn't get. Jumpy, and I'm not reading this wrong, Deffy, not Daffy, Deffy, I'm assuming a deaf dwarf, Dizzy, a great choice to not include this next one, Hickey, Wheezy, Baldy, Gabby, Nifty, Sniffy, Swift, Lazy, Puffy, Stuffy, Tubby, Shorty, and last but not least on this list, Burpee. And I guess they went through a process of elimination and just kind of took one out at a time until they were down to the seven that they went with. But I think that's kind of interesting. They actually made some good choices in leaving some of those out.
Yeah. Huh.
That's all you have to say about that.
Honestly, I don't really care about any of this damn information that's in the behind-the-scenes segment.
If you want to get, if you want to become knowledgeable about Snow White and everything that happened before the film, go to a website and read it yourself.
Yes, exactly.
Because this movie does not warrant that big of a discussion unless it's something that's super, super interesting. Just take it, take our word for it that a lot of stuff went into making it. They had to argue with each other. They had to rework stuff. They had to go back to the drawing board and do stuff. It just was a long process.
Yes, so getting into the actual show, and this is where I have a huge fucking problem with this film. My first, as we open, and she starts singing. First of all, as I said before, her voice is like nails on a chalkboard, and the echoing down the fucking well. Did we really need that? Yeah. Oh God. I'm sitting here shaking my head with my hand over my eyes. Trying to make.
We gotta make it a thing for all our Disney movies. That everything we do in the spotlight, we include a like a 5-second synopsis of the entire movie. We gotta do that with every Disney movie. And since I did the one on, well, I guess it goes to the one on Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah. Well,
so it's your turn for this one.
Well, you know, I'm not really going to synopsize the film, honestly, because, first of all, I have several issues with this film. The first being, we don't actually know, as the film opens, as she starts this whole singing down the wishing well shit, we don't actually know that she's a princess. You know, when, like, if you're, like, say you're an adult or a child or whatever going to this in 1937, as this film opens, yeah, you have the whole fairy tale, and it says that she's a princess. When you actually first see her, she's in fucking rags. She looks like fucking Cinderella, for Christ. And then, when this basically non-sequitur moron of a prince basically jumps the wall and sneaks up behind her, she runs away, and at first when I watched it earlier, before this recording, I thought it was because she didn't want him to see her in her, basically Raggedy Ann clothes.
Right.
And then, come to find out later on, she has this nice, regal, shoulder pad bigger than my tits royal outfit on. And it's like, oh, she's a princess. Oh, it's her stepmother. Where's her fucking father? Where's the fucking king, for Christ's sake?
I sense some hostility. Hold on, I gotta do a 5-second synopsis. for the one person out there that has never watched Snow White. Mir tells Queen Snow White's hotter than Queen, which the Queen had to be the only person that Snow White could have been hotter than. So Snow White orders, the Queen orders Snow White to be killed. Snow White runs off, basically, befriends the dwarves, lives with them, Queen sneaks up, gives her apple bitten, Snow White falls under coma type thing, in coffin type thing, which was kind of creepy, Prince eventually kisses her, we know that always solves all the curses and whatnot, Snow White comes back, we all live happily ever after. I left a few things out because...
Let's go back. Let's examine this, because I have to bring up a point about this film.
I can bring up a lot of points about this.
Never actually said how old she is, but just looking at her, she seems like she could be anywhere from, I'd say, 17 to early 20s. Okay? Let's go on the assumption that she's a 17-year-old teenager. Okay?
Even if you go on the assumption that she's a 24-year-old, it's still going to work. Your point's still going to make it.
I think you know where I'm going with this, don't you?
Sure do.
Don't spoil it, but I think you know where I'm going with this. You have this young girl that flees from her stepmother into the forest, into seven strangers' houses or house, and then these old midgets come home to find this young girl in their beds, I need to say that plurally, beds, because there are seven fucking dwarfs, and she lays across three or four of the beds to go to sleep. Okay? And these dwarfs are outside of Dopey. Dopey is the only dwarf that I can excuse from this, because he's just goofy, and he's younger than all the other ones. Or he seems to be younger than all the other ones. All these other... The other six dwarves are old, white-bearded men who I would assume that are anywhere from 50 to 75 years old. Now, I'm all for a little bit of age difference, but a 75-year-old man and a 17 to 24-year-old young girl, fuck you, Disney.
I got to go with my major problem. Okay, you know, you always get that question, hypothetical question, when someone's trying to, like, make conversation. If you could go back to any time period in history, yeah, where would you go? Like, would you go to the Wild West? Would you go to, well, you know, the medieval times? Well, if you could go to any Disneyland, and I don't mean Disneyland Amusement Park, I mean any land that exists in a Disney movie, the land of Snow White would be my last choice, and let me tell you why. I would never want to go back there, because if Snow White is the fairest creature of them all in Snow White Land, count me out. What the hell is wrong with this mirror? I love the mirror, but if the mirror is saying that Snow White's the hottest girl in this land, yikes.
Alright, I only know one person who is an albino, and that is Snowball Sailor. And he is a male, okay? I have never actually seen a pure white albino female, okay?
But if you did, it would look like Snow White.
I did not say that. That was not me.
That was, I don't know who said that. Do we have a third person on this record?
No, that was you.
That was a magic mirror.
Alright, first of all...
Tony J.
First of all, the mirror said she has skin as white as snow. Just by looking at this DVD cover, her skin is either flesh tone or fucking peach. It's white. Because I looked at I paused it on her when she is in the fucking garden whispering or singing to the white doves or whatever. The dove is pure white. Her skin is peach.
Yeah. I got more problems, though. Let me go on the whole list. I have a problem with the fact that the Queen demands that this is supposed to be the first animated movie Disney's doing for kids. Not only do we have a kid sleeping with dwarves that are old, but we have the Queen demanding the dead girl's heart.
Yeah.
This is not some lightly, like, oh, just come back and tell me you took care of her. Bring me her heart, and then the guys come back with a pig's heart instead. This is for kids, folks. I'm not done yet. Then go to the end of the movie where we have, well, okay, it's also for kids, and we're putting, in the middle of the movie, an apple as an evil thing. She bites into an apple, which is the curse. That's not good for kids. And then at the end, when you have the prince actually standing in front of her coffin, these are not things I would think of if I'm making a movie for kids. Call me crazy, but I don't like any of those parts of this movie.
I completely agree.
Why would you try to make apples bad?
Well, you know,
it should have been like some type of candy. It should have been like chocolate. Like, tell kids you eat chocolate, you're going to fall into a coma.
Yes. Well, saying an apple a day keeps the doctor away or whatever. I don't know, you know. I don't know.
But I don't know. The coffin, the pig's heart, her heart, the dwarves. I'm just confused.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly don't know where to go from here, because yeah, and you're
that's my favorite part of the movie. I don't know.
So,
It had to be something that didn't have to do with the Doors, and maybe singing Whistle. Maybe Whistle While We Work is my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was, you know, there was nothing creepy necessarily about that, except that there was Doors singing it, I guess. But it was nothing bad necessarily for the song, and I like to whistle while I work, so I'm good.
The dwarves, even though they are old men, they come off as childish, okay? So, I would question, there are only two adults in this film. The queen, who wants to kill the princess, and the prince, who's only in two fucking scenes! Where
and the prince,
fucking adults?
What,
where is her father?
What kind of prince in shining armor tells her to leave and never come back?
Okay, now wait. That was not the prince.
Well, oh, okay, yeah, you're right, you're right.
The guy that was trying to kill her, that was the queen's huntsman.
That's right.
The prince. The
huntsman. Okay, so the huntsman is the actually only redeeming adult.
Yes.
The only adult with redeeming qualities in the whole film.
Exactly. Because he won't go through with what the queen wants him to do. But still, outside
that's
him,
my favorite part, I guess.
Outside of the huntsman and outside of the dwarfs, where are all the other fucking adults besides the queen and the prince?
Exactly. So not only is fruit bad, but adults are bad.
Yeah, pretty much.
I blame this movie. No, I'm just kidding. Whistle While We Work. That's the best part of this movie. I just decided it.
Yes. And all right, explain to me what the fucking deal was with the vultures.
I don't like when, and you know, I shouldn't say because this is the first Disney film, so I guess they didn't have anything to compare it to. But I don't like the having a animals in a Disney movie that don't speak.
Okay, and that's fine. Don't get me wrong. That's more than fine, but. You know, I can see, like, with this film, with Cinderella and with Snow White, or Sleeping Beauty. Yeah. In Cinderella, there is an exception. Well, the mice are an exception in Cinderella because they do talk. But
okay, the owl and Sleeping Beauty.
What?
Yeah, the owl and Sleeping Beauty.
No, alright, well, what I'm saying is, the animals in this, they were communicating to her through song. Granted, that's kind of weird and corny. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it doesn't. But who the hell is going to have a talking deer? You know, that doesn't come to
me. I needed one talking animal. It's not Disney. There's not one talking animal. Thank God Disney learned.
The Queen's...
It's creepy.
What?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the vultures.
Well, alright, going back to the vultures, going back to my original point is, what was their fucking purpose? I don't understand the purpose of the vultures in this film. Because at first, the way that they're shown, it makes it look like they're either going to snatch the apple out of the basket before the queen even gets to the cottage. And then later, when she is cornered on the cliff and she's trying to push the rock down to kill the dwarves, and she, you know, the cliff crumbles and then she falls off. The vultures, they're watching her, and for some odd reason, I thought they were going to come in and try to save her, save the witch or the queen, whatever the fuck you want to call her. But they didn't.
I don't see the point either. And I just realized another part that I don't like about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which I must. Okay, you're a queen. You have to disguise yourself to get Snow White to eat this apple. Why would you disguise yourself as the ugliest human being besides Snow White on the planet? Like, if a hag like that comes to my door and tries to get me to eat something, ain't happening. Like, if a beautiful woman comes to my door and offers me an apple, I'd probably eat it. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It was almost creepier than anything else. The hag was maybe the creepiest person in the whole film.
Yeah.
and she's going to take her advice and be tricked by her. That doesn't fly. I don't understand. That doesn't. That's a bad choice. That doesn't, like, that would never happen.
Yes. So.
In other words, we give this film two thumbs up.
two smelly toes down. That's a Looney Tunes reference, ladies and gentlemen. So, just to pretty much close out this little discussion on the actual plot, after several seasons pass, the prince, the moron who left previously, comes back, learns of her plight, visits her coffin, captivated by her beauty. He kisses her, which breaks the spell and awakens her. The dwarfs and the animals all rejoices. Snow White and the prince ride off into the prince's castle. Okay. Can we say necrophilia?
And can we say, notice it said, after several seasons pass. This dude was supposed to be in love with her, gave two shits about her for years.
Yep.
For years. Yeah, that's some true love. True love, folks.
Yes, exactly. Going into some differences between the film and the fairy tale, though Disney's Snow White is similar to the fairy tale version, there are several differences. In the fairy tale, Snow White's mother wishes for a child with lips as red as blood, hair as dark as the window frame, and skin as white as snow. This does not occur in the film, as Disney's Snow White is shown with only her stepmother, the queen, and there is no scene of her biological mother. In the fairy tale, Snow White accepts three gifts from the witch, a girdle, a poison comb, and the apple, but is rescued from the first two gifts by the dwarfs. When she is offered the apple, she is unwilling to eat it, and only accepts after the witch takes a bite of the apple that is not poisoned. However, in the film, Snow White only accepts one gift, the apple, from the witch. After she helps the witch inside the dwarf's house, some of the woodland birds attacked the witch as a warning, which was misinterpreted by Snow White. She bites the apple after being told that the apple is magical and one bite will make all of her dreams come true, namely marrying the prince. Okay, first of all, how the hell is only part of an apple poison? How the hell is only one part of the apple not poisonous in a fairy tale? That makes
sense. And two more instances as to why Snow White is not a good character. Number one, she's dumb because she misinterpreted the birds. Number two, she's lazy because instead of just trying to get the prince to love her, she has to bite an apple so that her dream comes true. That's just,
you know, I think she dyed her hair black. Thanks.
And who wishes for a kid with red lips like blood?
Yeah, that's, no. The fairy tale, Snow White is not awakened by the prince's kiss. Instead, the prince buys the coffin and Snow White's body from the dwarves and has it carried with him towards his castle. During the journey, a piece of apple in Snow White's throat becomes dislodged and she awakens. What kind of...
I wish they would have done that in the movie because then it would have been even worse.
What kind of fucked up plot is that?
That is what I would expect out of, like, that's what I would expect out of a 1980s cartoon that wasn't getting a lot of attention, that some writer was just, like, couldn't come up with something.
So Fox. lastly, in the fairy tale, Snow White...
And Megatron got away.
What?
And Megatron got away, and there'll be another episode next week.
Lastly, in the fairy tale, Snow White faces her stepmother one final time after eating the poisoned apple. The stepmother attends the wedding of Snow White and the prince, but she is stopped from causing further harm by being forced to wear hot iron shoes to her death. In the film, the stepmother, as the witch, is chased up to the top of a mountain by the dwarfs after giving Snow White the poisoned apple. When she tries to dislodge a boulder onto the dwarfs to kill them, lightning strikes the edge and she's standing on and she falls to her death along with the boulder falling and presumably crushing her.
Okay. Another great scene for kids.
Forced to wear hot iron shoes. Alright then, I may have to change the description for this episode between Midget stalkers, hot iron shoes. Yeah, I'm going to have to really go back and look at this information to craft a very well out iTunes description for this episode. You mentioned earlier 50 ideas for the dwarves' names and personalities were listed in the film's proposal. The list included all of the names finally included except Dopey and Doc, Dopey being the last to be developed, which is kind of cool. Convinced that it would fail, the Hollywood film industry labeled the film Disney's Folly. Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Pinto Colvig, who voiced Sleepy and Grumpy, was the voice of Goofy. The prince was originally a much more major character, but the difficulty found in...
I forgot that's why the prince probably wasn't in there.
Yeah.
Why is it so much harder to animate a man than it is to animate a woman? I don't understand.
Women are more curvy? Anyway, 25 songs were written for the film, but only 8 were used. The first full-length animated feature film to come out of the United States. One of the first films to have related merchandise available at the time of the premiere. The first animated feature to be selected for the National Film Registry. Disney Studios in Burbank was built with the profits from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. not a lot of profits there. Of the film's characters, only ones in the title have names. The Queen and the Prince are never named outside of these titles. And I'm not going into all these goofs because it's just continuity stuff. And
yeah, I like the you gotta read the one about the Shakespeare one with the Dopey. Something about that they didn't want him to use the name Dopey as one of the dwarves, mm-hmm. and he convinced them because he said Dopey is a word and Shakespeare used it. And nobody's ever found the word Dopey in any of Shakespeare's plays. Thought that was kind of funny.
Where is that one?
I don't know, somewhere in the towards the bottom maybe of the trivia. And there's something else about if you have one about Ward Kimball.
Yeah. He only quit after his two main sequences, the dwarfs eating soup and building a bed for Snow White, respectively, were cut. Walt Disney convinced him to stay by giving him the character of Jiminy Cricket in the next feature, Pinocchio.
That's kind of funny.
Oh, here's the shakes. Some animators were supposedly opposed to the name Dopey, claiming that it was too modern a word to use in a timeless fairy tale. Walt Disney made the argument that William Shakespeare used the word in one of his plays. This managed to convince everyone, although any reference to the term Dopey is yet to be found in any of Shakespeare's work.
Disney was a smart guy.
This is an old conniver. So getting into the music segment here. The songs in Snow White were composed by Frank Churchill and Larry Morey. Paul J. Smith and Lee Harleen composed the incidental music score. Well-known songs from Snow White include Hi-Ho, Someday My Prince Will Come, and Whistle While You Work. Because Disney did not have its own music publishing company at this time, the publishing rights for the music and songs were administered through the Bourne Company. I wonder what Jason's up to. continues to hold these rights. In later years, the studio was able to acquire back the rights to the music from many of the other films, but not this one. Snow White became the first American film to have a soundtrack album released in conjunction with the feature film. Prior to Snow White, a movie soundtrack recording was unheard of and little value to movie studio. That I find very, very funny, because now almost every film that comes out, you have a soundtrack and you have a separate score, CD or iTunes, MP3, whatever the hell you want to call it.
And the main songs on the track, we mentioned some of them, but I'm Wishing, one song, With a Smile and a Song, Whistle While You Work, Hi-Ho, The Washing Song, The Dwarf's Yodel Song, Someday My Prince Will Come, the Hi Ho Reprise, One Song Reprise, and the Number of My Prince Will Come Reprise.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of the best ones are Hi Ho and Whistle While You Work, obviously.
Yep, pretty much.
And then there was two songs that were not included, Music in Your Soup, and You're Never Too Old to Be Young, which they were both replaced.
Mm, yeah. On the classic Disney 60 Years of Musical Magic, this includes Someday My Prince Will Come on the red disc, Hi-Ho on the blue disc, The Silly Song, Dwarf's Yodel Song on the green disc, and I'm Wishing and One Song on the purple disc. On Disney's Greatest Hits, this also includes Hi-Ho on another blue disc and Someday My Prince Will Come on the green disc.
How is Whistle While You Work not on any of classic Disney 60 Years of Musical Magic?
I don't know.
There must have been something with rights or something on that one.
It's probably a rights issue.
Yeah.
Moving into the legacy segment, Disney's wife Lillian told him no one's ever going to pay a dime to see a dwarf picture. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs premiered at the Carthay Circle Theater December 21st, 1937, to a wildly receptive audience. Wait, isn't this the same damn information from earlier? Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Not the next part. The film received a standing ovation at its completion from a star-studded audience that included Charlie Chaplin, Shirley Temple, Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Judy Garland, Ginger Rogers, Jack Benny, Clark Gable, Ed Sullivan, Milton Berle, Sean Barrymore, Marlene Dietrich. Wow. That's true. So you have your brother and your wife telling you you're going to fail. This is like your typical everyone tells you, tries to bring you down, and you still do it and succeed. And then 6 days later, Walt Disney and the Seven Dwarfs appeared on the cover of Time magazine. The New York Times said, "Thank you very much, Mr. Disney."
Yes. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was released on Blu-ray disc on October 6, 2009. A new DVD edition will be released on November 24th. The Blu-ray includes high-definition version of the movie sourced from a new restoration by Lowry Digital, a DVD copy of the film, and several bonus features not included on the 2001 DVD. So that must be the one that my mom has that I got for it, is the 2001 DVD. The Snow White DVD that just came out last month and back in October. In October when it was released, I found an exclusive, I don't know if it was online exclusive, I found it on Amazon and Best Buy. It comes in this, like, it's not a Foot Locker like the G.I. Joe set, but it's like that. It's a blue box, and it's the DVD, it's the two-disc edition DVD, and it's got, like, all these booklets. It was $150. I don't know, it's some super special collector's edition something or other. I'm sorry. After watching this film, I wouldn't pay more than $5.
Yeah. I gotta say a couple things real quick just because we kind of skipped over them, but the film still registers as one of the top 10 American film moneymakers of all time. And I find this next part interesting, that the film inspired MGM to produce its own fantasy film in 1939. You may have heard of it, The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And then just a couple other things. As far as AFI recognition, came in at, let's see, in the original 1998, it was number 49 of AFI's 100 movies. 2003, The Queen was listed as the 10th best villain. And it's obviously listed as number one animated film that we talked about a little bit ago. But the box office receipts, it made four times more money than any movie produced that year, which is just crazy.
Yes, very much so. So are we done with legacy here?
I think so.
All right, going into the closing, what are your final thoughts on this one?
Let's see. Snow White. How can I sum up my thoughts on Snow White? Oh yeah, it was the first Disney movie ever, so I guess that makes it the greatest film ever, according to everybody in the world. But in reality, if we're going to compare it to other Disney movies, it would come in the... I'd have to have a whole list of Disney movies in front of me, but I would think it would be in the, at least in the bottom half, if not the bottom couple of, like, Disney movies ever, as far as quality goes. Fine, I'll give it credit. It was the first movie. It was not as good as... It wasn't even as good as Sleeping Beauty. I don't even know if it was as good as Cinderella, but I'll save that for the Cinderella show, and I'll make a firm opinion on that. But it's nowhere near most Disney films, quality-wise.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. I don't know if it was on the DVD that I was looking... Because I was looking at the two-disc edition in Walmart before we were sat down to record this. And it says on there something about... I don't know if it's restored commentary or whatever. I could have sworn I read somewhere something about Walt Disney himself, Mr. Disney himself, wanting to make a sequel to this. And of course, that will tie in later on in the Disney Animation Spotlight, because when we talk about Lady and the Tramp and Cinderella and some of the other franchises like Lion King and Aladdin, we will be talking about the entire franchise, not just one film. Because Aladdin had sequels, Lady and the Tramp had sequel.
That's one thing that Disney just screwed up on.
Cinderella had sequel.
You don't make sequels to Disney movies. That was just stupid.
Not to really tip my hand. I wasn't too thrilled with Return of Jafar, but I did like Aladdin and the King of Thieves. I thought that was kind of cool. But
yeah, I just would have been fine with it if there had never been a sequel to any of them, though.
Yeah.
But that's not Hollywood.
Yeah, no, not at all. So thank you for joining us here on TuneCast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. First is you can visit www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other GCRN podcasts there. The second is you can just stop by predaconempire.com/nexus. Those are our new forums. The third is you can leave the show feedback on iTunes. Please do this. The fourth is you can visit another great geek culture website, www.earth-2.net. On their forums, you can find our shows for the... you can find our threads for our shows in the self-promotion section. And the fifth is the email address, which is gcrntunecast@gmail.com. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say what show you're leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. You can follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCRN Tooncast. Mine is TFG1 Mike. And what is your Twitter, sir?
Mine's Boss Kadog, and I just want to remind people to leave voicemails or email us if you can find a Disney heroine worse than Snow White.
Yes. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast and wish you'll join us next time for a Tooncast holiday show. That will feature Kevin, myself, Steve Megatron, and the Televixen, who is another one of my Twitter followers, and I follow her as well. She actually filled in on the Jetsons and Flintstones episode. For now, I am TFG and Mike with the Professor Boss K Dog saying the immortal words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out, and thank you for listening. Until next time.
Podcast good!
Thanksgiving is just 1 week away, and Christmas is right around the corner. Are you looking for a gift for family members and friends that is slightly not the average gift? Well, look no further. I am TFG and Mike from the Geekcast Radio Network, and besides podcasting, I am also a published author of poetry. I have 3 books of poetry published and 1 for sale right now. It is The Twists of Faith and Fate. This is an 85-page softcover book. It comes signed and only costs $20 per copy. I have 20 or more copies available. For more details, email me at tfg1podcast@gmail.com.
There once was a boy, an albino, I'm told, who possessed the power of Pen Pusher Gold. He had many stories, all short and exciting, but nobody knew, and so he began writing. He sat there all summer and skillfully sought to perfectly ponder and polish each plot. The settings were set, all the characters cast, his fingers were flying and flailing so fast, and soon the young man with the snowy complexion quickly concocted the caffeine collection. He smiled, satisfied with his clever creation. Oh, the things that did pour from his imagination. Stories of pirates and future police, of devils and bullies, and a twist press release. Fantasy, mystery, both are included. Comedy, action, no genre excluded. You say to yourself, it's too good to be true, but author Steve Saylor would not lie to you. An audiobook so you don't have to read. And hey, $15 is all that you need.
From the author of the podcast novel, Black Shadow, Steve Saylor presents The Caffeine Collection, a dynamic audiobook collection of short stories presented by ringtonefeeder.com and stevesaylor.net. Steve presents a genre mashup of multiple stories for your ears.
I have to be on caffeine to write all this.
Steve Saylor presents the Caffeine Collection on sale October 28th, 2009.
So mark this day down so you will not forget. For more information, stevesaylor.net.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Tooncast coming this week.
Before evil sorcerers cast their spells, before perilous rulers would be kings, before wicked witches ruled the sea, there was an apple.
If the apple in the bloom, let the sleeping death seep through.
The one that started it all.
Make a wish. I wish. And take a bite.
Then I'll be perished in the land.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Now available on Disney DVD and video.
Who wins? In darkness, I summon thee.